Welcome to the Barbell Coach and Physio. Diving deep into all things powerlifting, strength, and rehab. Your hosts are Matthew Burton from River City Barbell and Laura Fox from Fox Physiotherapy and Strength Rehab.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Barbell Coach and Physio. So this week we have on Zoe, which is our dietitian over at River City. She's been on here before. And today we wanted to discuss a few topics to do with nutrition because this following Sunday, both me and Zoe have a webinar on you might want to remind me about that one, Zoe. I can't remember.
It's a bit of a long title. So it's like five simple strategies that can actually change the way that we sort of approach powerlifting
nutrition. Yeah, so we got that coming up because Zoe actually has a course coming up for powerlifting nutrition that's about to be released. So we thought we would do a webinar, some free context to show everybody what Zoe has kind of created in small format. And then we'd also release this podcast to show you guys a bit of information on the difference between someone who is training to be an athlete and then someone who's training to just generally have strength in the gym. Because I do feel like in today's society in powerlifting that a lot of people want to be an athlete, but they don't want to eat like an athlete. And to get results and be at a top level, even if you're not genetically gifted, you need to have like all your boxes in line. So yeah, so today, like my first part about it all would be like, what would you recommend the difference would be between like an athlete and someone who's just going to the gym to get stronger? You know, because the difference is between there in my eyes would be that if you missed a meal or two or you didn't eat for a day as someone goes to the gym, it's not going to affect you. But if you're in a prep in a competition, it's going to make a big difference.
100%. And you're right there. And I think it does come down to that like consistency of strategies, because if someone has, and I see this a lot of the time, if someone has like a general, like they're just trying to be healthy, there's no kind of like end point to that. You never get to the point of health. So like you always just continue doing it. But if you miss a day of training, if you have a week off on a holiday, anything like that, there's no immediate effects that will take you away from sort of being healthy. You know, you can kind of just get back on track. And this is where people have that, you know, like, oh, I'll get back to it on Monday sort of mentality. And it means that their progress ends up being really quite slow, but because they don't have anything super specific that they are working towards, you know, they don't really feel that super strong motivation to do that. Whereas, you know, when we're competing for a competition, like that is a very specific set date. You know, if you're, you know, 12 weeks out and you start missing weeks or like going away and, you know, not following any of your plan during that time, you know, that's like less weeks that you're actually going to have to build strength, build power, have your recovery working well, you know, all those sorts of things that are definitely going to determine how you, you know, present and actually compete on the day. So I think that the consistency is a really big thing and just the mindset around that kind of thing as well in particular. And I think even sort of coming into that, you know, a massive thing that I always talk about a lot of my clients when it comes to performance is, you know, how we're actually structuring those sort of timelines, because I talk about this a lot in my program as well, but like powerlifting is a really unique sport in that, you know, the end goal is performance, but it's so saturated with these phases of being in a surplus to gain muscle and then being in these phases of almost sort of small deficits because you still have to stay within your weight class, right? And it's always about how can we max out as much as we can, but within that weight class. So there are those sort of restrictions on that and people just don't really understand how to manage that well. And I'm sure you've seen in your experience how people don't manage that
The silliest thing that I see people do is they're like, I need to cut into this weight class because I'm 4 kilos over. And they don't realize that their body weight should, like, unless you're going to hit a record or win a competition, your body wants to sit at a body weight, you know, and that's what's going to be healthy for you. And then I also see that, like, they're like, I've got to cut into this thing. And then out of nowhere, they're like, oh, shit, I've got to drop 4 kilos in water. And then instead of just being smart and doing, like, a cut, say, 5 months out or 4 months out, sitting under that body weight or sitting above maybe a kilo, where they just have to manipulate, like we've spoke about before, just fiber and your actual other things that manipulate, and then you get under and you're healthier. You can eat a meal after weigh-in and you can go straight into competition the next day feeling good, unless it's a 2 hour weigh-in, of course. And these are the mistakes I see people make massive things with. And the big thing is, I try and say to my athletes, and I've actually been through this a few times now with a few people, is like, they'll get to this body weight where their body continuously wants to stay at that weight. And I'm like, you're just depleting your actual strength going back all the time. And we'll see that, we've seen this personally with Dean, the other coach at River City.
Yeah.
He wanted to be in the 82s for so long. And then I said, mate, just go to the 90s because you're going to be stronger. And he went to the 90 kilos and he put like 40 kilos on his total. And it was only, it's just because his body wants to sit at that body weight. And it's like, at the end of the day, like, if your body wants to sit there, why don't you just fill that weight class out and get stronger?
Yeah, 100%. And I think, like, there was definitely a key, like, a few key things that you mentioned there in terms of some of those, like, really simple mistakes that people can make. And one of the first ones that you sort of were alluding to was around, you know, people not actually planning out, you know, their year around their sort of competition. So they're not actually even planning, right, if I am sitting that 4 kilos over and, you know, I can realistically and healthily be in that lower weight class, you know, that they're leaving it way too late. They're not thinking about, well, when is best to do that weight loss phase so that I can still go into competition fueling really well and feeling really well. And that's a key point, because if we know that you need to be adjusting your weight, we just need to be planning that out. But, you know, I tend to, with a lot of my clients, like, we're planning out that, you know, like 6 months in advance, because I'm thinking, you know, just because we need to drop your weight doesn't mean we're going to take away from your performance. And any deficit is going to do that. I really encourage to all my clients that, like, eating in a deficit is purposely underfueling your body. Like, nothing about that screams performance. Like, it's not performance at all. So being in a deficit is not going to be ideal for any kind of performance. So that was the one thing, is that we need to actually plan, you know, way far in advance as to, do we actually need to adjust your weight and your body composition? And then the second thing that you mentioned was, yeah, like, people trying to do these, like, stupid cuts, you know, right beforehand. And, like, one of the things that you said is, like, yeah, you can actually manipulate things like water, things like fiber. But I still see so many of the people coming to me like, oh yeah, like, I need to do a cut and then I'll cut all my calories down. I'm like, well, why are we cutting calories out? And so many people don't realize that, you know, we're doing a weight cut, but it doesn't have to mean a calorie cut. Like, there's so many other ways that we can manipulate your weight. And the goal here, again, is to put as little stress on your body. So fiber that you mentioned is one of the best strategies to use, because it really doesn't add any stress on your body. It's not taking away calories. It's not taking away a lot of the carbohydrates and anything that we need, you know, to fuel your muscle glycogen and have those energy stores there. You know, it's something that's very low risk and really not going to affect your body too far if you're doing it for like 3 or 4 days. Like, it's not going to have any.
Because one of the things I think with water cuts too that people don't realize is they deplete themselves from water, so they deplete their muscles from sodium, everything, and then you get cramps and you open yourself up for more injury as well. And that they just think like, oh, I can manipulate water and then I get water back in within like X amount of time, but you're still depleting your muscle from all the like the nutrients that it needs to function correctly. So,
yeah, and exactly as you just said there, like, the electrolytes that we lose when we dehydrate our body, it's more than just hydration, you know, like, a lot of those electrolytes are actually really important for muscle contraction. So if we don't have those, our muscles can't actually contract properly. And then, yeah, that's where we end up leading into some of these other issues and risking more injury as well, because our body physically can't, I guess, like, perform it the way it's supposed to. And, like, a very specific part that I go through in my program, especially when we're talking around some of these sort of topics, is that just because you put weight back on post, like, your cut, like, it doesn't mean that your body is still in an optimal position. Because you can go out and eat a huge big meal and gain another 3-4 kilos and be like, oh, you know, I'm fine, I'm back up to my normal weight. Doesn't mean your body is well nourished. Doesn't mean that you're optimally hydrated whatsoever. And it's a very false, you know, sense of security that some people get.
But if you deplete yourself for, like, let's look at worst scenario, right? Someone depletes themselves like 2 weeks out or a week and a half out, like, because they're way over their weight class. all the micronutrients and electrolytes and everything that you've depleted yourself for that week is not going to get back in 24 hours. So that's where I think people don't realize it's like you need all that stuff to function correctly. So when you do a cut over a, say, a 4 or so 5 months period, or if you periodize it, like you do your training and you plan it out, like, because I know I plan people's training out like 3 months prior, but I'm saying, like, not to say I follow that plan all the way, but, you know, you can, things do veer different roads and we do change things. But, you know, like if you periodize it, you work it all out, you know, you can come in under your weight to your weight class, like 2 kilos, a kilo and a half. And like I've seen people manipulate fiber and sodium, the like a little bit out from comp and drop like 2 kilos, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And you're right. Like that's the smart way to do it. Like we shouldn't be going in, you know, like completely depleting ourselves for sort of like weeks beforehand. You know, it should be that structured plan. And I like what you sort of said before that, like, you know, we will always plan it out ahead, those sort of months in advance, but it doesn't mean that things can't change. We just have an idea of like, all right, this is, you know, roughly what that's going to look like and where we kind of need to be ticking things off. Sometimes things do change. Other things pop up in life and we have to manage that as well. But at least we have a plan in place and we're not getting to that sort of 2 months out and be like, oh shit, like we're nowhere where we need to be. And the other thing that you said that I really wanted to touch on a little bit more as well was, you know, like whether it's actually worth it to do those weight cuts. Because as you said, you know, like there's no one can replete 100%. Like anyone is kidding themselves if they think that they're actually getting back to 100%. There's always still going to be some sort of deficit that you're getting from doing these cuts. Even if it is beneficial for you, like there's still going to be some deficit. So you have to kind of weigh out, like, is the actual benefit that you would get from a cut going to be more than that sort of risk factor or the deficit that you're going to get from doing it as well?
What I think too is like in, like I said previously, unless you're taking a world record or you're going to win and you know you'll win that weight class and smash it, like don't even bother. There's no point. It's just silly. Like I see people do like stupid cuts and then, but the thing is too, like I see people, they stay at these low weight classes and then they make micro progression over time. And when I say micro is because they're only making like 5 to 10 kilos every time. And then they just sit there and they think like, why am I not progressing? I'm like, because two, one, you're not building any muscle. And I'll go into that now because of another thing too, kind of segue into one thing I think too is people are afraid to gain a little bit of fat to gain muscle. So I see people say all the time, oh, I'll do a cut. My weight class sits at the high, say 82 kilos, right? They'll go, I'll cut back to like 77 or whatever and eat back up. Why don't you eat up to like 85, 86 and then cut back down to 82 so that your muscle mass grows more on your body instead of depleting your body of nutrients and then eating back up where your fat's going to get to 82 again anyway. I think people are afraid to go over their weight class to eat up to fill their weight class than they are to go cut back down. And they've got this obsession with, I want to be leaner. It's like to get leaner, sometimes you need to get a little bit chubbier.
100%. And that's actually really funny. I saw someone literally make a post about this on social media and they sort of showed it out really well because they kind of put it in a cycle of that, like, you know, oh yeah, I want to gain some muscle mass. So they'll start eating a little bit more. And then they sort of get that the mental of, oh no, I feel like I'm gaining too much weight. I feel like I'm getting pudgy. And it starts getting in their head too much, exactly as you're saying. And they start worrying that, oh no, I'm gaining too much. And then they stop and they start restricting back down. And then they wonder, like, well, why am I progressing? Why am I making any gains? Because you're not actually committing to the process. Like when you're doing a gaining phase, you need to be doing this for months. And this is where it's very different to those weight loss phases where it can be quicker, it can be sort of sharper. But as you said, like that's where it's actually a lot more beneficial for people to spend like long times actually gaining and building out their weight class. I do definitely agree with that. And then, you know, we know that there's going to be some body fat when you put on muscle mass. Like if you're in a surplus, you're going to put on some. It's it's a mental game, and it's almost just committing to that and be like, no, it's okay. We know that we can then address that later, but we do need to be fueling your body additional for you to build additional. As we said, any deficit is like strategic, I guess, like underfueling or intentional underfueling. When you're overfueling your body, it means that you're giving your body all the energy it needs to do your day-to-day functions, but you're also kind of giving it the extra little reserve. And that's where you can actually push harder. If you don't have that additional reserve, you can't push harder. You're literally just covering your basics of the day. That's all you get. You don't get anything extra for recovery.
One of the things I hear from people too a lot of the time is like, oh, I'm going to do like a lean bulk. And it's like, I don't know where on the internet they look at that shit, but like it's literally you're just stopping yourself, like you said before, from gaining more muscle. But the thing is too with all of that as well is like I feel like people think like you can gain fuckloads of muscle in a year. Like you'd be lucky if you can gain 800 grams of muscle in 12 months, like cool, sick, you've done well. Like, and that's someone that's like 100% restricted to everything they do, you know what I mean?
Exactly. And this is funny because this is obviously a conversation that we were having with the River City team this week, I think it was, because someone was asking about this. And yeah, like the rate of muscle gain is actually a lot slower than what we think it is. And, you know, it obviously depends on other things like genetics, but, you know, it requires you to have that optimal training program, that optimal nutrition plan. But even with those, it's actually a lot smaller than what people think. And the longer that you're training for, so if you've already been gymming consistently for a couple of years, your rate of muscle gain is going to be a lot lower than those people that are in their very first year. So our body's adaptation starts to sort of reduce here as well. So if you're 6 years in, like, mate, it's going to take you a really freaking long time to gain muscle mass. And as you say, if you're trying to aim for those lean bulks, which to be honest, for a lot of people, when I think about, whenever I talk about energy balance, I talk about it on a spectrum, being like you've got your weight loss at one end, weight maintenance in the middle, and like a surplus on the other end, and you can kind of be anywhere on that spectrum. If you're lean bulking, people are pretty much still sitting at maintenance. They're like, oh no, I just want to stay at the same weight, but I want to be able to put on muscle and lose body fat, and like I just want to stay. But yet, like, if you're staying there, you're going to be getting that like tiny bit of that body fat loss and at that tiny bit of muscle gain, but that's all you're going to get. And then the more that you kind of move up towards that higher end of surplus, you're going to be able to get more of that, you know, muscle gain, but you will also get that little bit more of the body fat gain as well. Up until a point, obviously, if you're just eating stupidly over, you're going to start gaining way more body fat. But, you know, you want to position yourself in that good range where you can get the maximum amount of muscle that you can build, knowing that building body fat is just a part of that process, and we need to accept it and feel okay in our bodies with that. You know, if that means for those couple of months, hey, wear a little bit looser fitting clothing so you don't get really in your head about that sort of stuff, like do that, do whatever makes it easy for your body. But, you know, we have to do that if you want to gain the muscle mass. And I think this is where it draws back to, you know, the topic that we sort of introduced of, you know, if you're going to be performing as an athlete versus a general gym goer, if you want that performance, you want to be driving the most maximal muscle mass because you're already limited by just the body's potential to build it. Why are you limiting yourself yet again by trying to really restrict your calories with doing it as well?
I do think that like one of the reasons why people are afraid to go up into weight classes is more of the fact that they know they're going to have to start at the bottom again sometimes. And,
oh, yeah.
And the fact that like, you know, they might not be as strong as they were in the weight class before. But if you've already maximized your weight class and you're winning competitions, maybe it's time to go up because you need a bit more of a challenge and stop being the top dog and go into like unknown territory where it is like a bit harder.
100%.
Yeah. And like there, I guess there, what's your thoughts on too when if you've been in maintenance coming into a competition and then you come out of comp, you do a small cut and then go into a bulk phase. So it makes your mind feel a little bit better that you've kind of, for health reasons, bring your health markers back, doing a little small cut, get yourself a little bit healthier, and then go into a bulking phase moving forward.
Yeah, like that that's definitely a strategy that we can use. I think it obviously depends where someone is at that point. Like if they're still in a really good healthy spot, they might not need to do a cut and they might just be like, hey, yeah, I want to kind of keep pushing forward from here. But no, if they have been gaining that little bit more because they have been that small surplus leading into comp, exactly, it might be worth doing sort of like a 4 to an 8 week sort of cut. And that's what I mean. Like these periods are so much shorter and you can really still maintain your strength and just trim that little bit of body fat off quite easily and then go back into building that sort of muscle again. Because, yeah, I think you're exactly right. Like we need to be doing those long phases of surplus because otherwise if we just do the little phases and then keep just swapping back out, as I talked about that sort of cycle beforehand, you're just not going to get anywhere.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're just going to keep going backwards and not achieving what you actually want to achieve. Because, like, I think when we look at powerlifting, right, and we look at strength, where does strength come from? It comes from, like, most of your strength comes from muscle mass, right? You know, there's 1 in 5 that have, like, technically proficient movement. But we look at, like, how do you increase strength? You increase muscle mass. So how do you increase muscle mass? You eat more food. So, and you fill out your weight class. It's simple as that. It's so simple mathematics in that context, but so many people don't understand it. And I think that the biggest mistake they make is they spend more phase times cutting than they do in bulking.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And, like, I find that this is, like, across the board, any, like, powerlifting athlete that comes to me, whether they're recreational or sort of higher level, like, I always see people, honestly, like, under.
Yeah.
Like, so many people are under-consuming their intake. And when it comes to a lot of women, I often see it from, you know, so many women are, like, they're just preconditioned to being in that sort of dieting cycle. So they don't actually realize how much they need to eat to get to performance. Because as we said, you know, so many people don't even eat at their maintenance. They're always trying to plan their food at that deficit. And then it's like the extra things that come in on the weekend or the alcohol or all those other things that actually put them back up to their maintenance. So what they actually plan their food out to be and what their intentional intake is generally always going to be in a deficit. So when they're starting to, you know, maybe get a little bit more focused on their food, they're like, oh, well, I can only eat this much, right? I'm like, no, like you need way more. And specifically carbohydrates, people need to like embrace the carbs because that's what's, you know, that's our best energy providing food for our body. You know, that's what I find so many people will excel with when they start getting more of this food. All of my clients suddenly say like, oh shit, Zoe, like I'm feeling so much better. I'm recovering so much better from my sessions. I mean, like you've seen a lot of the messages after clients start working with me. They're like, shit, this feels a lot easier. And it's just like, yeah, like we're fueling your body well. This is what it's supposed to.
I think one of the biggest ones I see is micronutrients, like people not eating their vegetables.
Yeah.
And if you want to be leaner, like literally, and people won't even believe like me when I say this, like if you want to be leaner, eat more vegetables. Like literally you will see your body composition change the moment you start eating vegetables. And it's so funny because like I know so many powerlifters that like just brush their veggies to the side and don't eat them when they don't realize how much of like a difference they're going to make in their physique, in their performance because of all the micronutrients that are within them. So
yeah, 100%. Everyone, like it's, and I get it, like it's boring part of nutrition. There's nothing exciting.
Vegetables, I mean, I love my veggies. I will eat like 10 meal. Tons.
I know. I feel like you and me are the outliers.
You know what I'm like, though, with salad, big bowl of salad. I eat it all to myself.
Look, if anyone's listening, this mate puts raw mushrooms in his salad, and I'm not about that, but like go for it, get the variety.
Yeah, I just like love salad. I grew up on it, but like my hate's probably, you know, protein because it makes me feel full. So, yeah. Yes. So, like, I'll just, like, eat my protein, like, normally first and then I'll smash my vegetables and, like, carbs after that because if I eat the other stuff, I won't eat my protein. So.
And this is honestly one of the biggest things because, again, like, when I was saying that a lot of people, when they come to me, they're not eating enough of those carbs. A lot of the time people are not eating enough carbs because they're overeating on protein. Like people are so still focused on like proteins, you know, the best macronutrient and, you know, it's what we should be focusing on. I'm like, well, actually, no. Like carbohydrates, we actually, you know, especially if you're an athlete, you should be eating a lot more carbs than what we are eating protein. That's not to say that protein's not important, but we especially know that when it comes to, you know, building muscle, once you start getting kind of above that like 2.2 grams per kilo of body weight of like protein, you know, you're not going to be getting really any other additional benefits from eating above that. And I'm often, you know, people, they don't like me as much for it, but I'm like, okay, well, we may actually need to bring back down your protein intake because you're going to be better off using it in terms of your carbs.
How much protein does your body absorb per meal? Isn't it? It's not very much, is it?
So it will absorb all of the protein that we're actually getting. The difference is what's actually going to be used towards your muscle building potential versus what's going to be used by other parts for your body in terms of the protein. Because protein is obviously important for like our skin, repair, like a lot of other things as well. But when it comes to like actually building up your muscle, the recommendation is like 0.45 grams per kilo per meal. So roughly like just under half your body weight per meal.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, cool.
In grams
of protein. Yeah, because like I think a lot of people think that your body absorbs so much protein. And you think you go back to bro science days and how many people smash like protein shakes on a consistent basis, all that type of crap. Oh. And then they don't eat very well and they just think like, you know, you've got to get your protein in after you finish. You've got to have that post meal, like that post workout fucking shake or whatever it is. Like,
oh, still the amount of people I have to convince. If you're eating a meal that contains protein after training, you don't need to have a protein shake. Like it's the same protein, but like apparently it's so much more magical if it's in a protein shaker. They're like, no, but I have to have that, and then I'm going to go home and smash a steak. I'm like, just have your steak.
Yeah, your body absorbs things way better from food anyway.
Yeah, and it has, as we were talking about, like this synergistic effect with the micronutrients. Because like, yes, steak still has other micronutrients in it as well that your protein shake isn't going to have. So you're shooting your foot if you're just having the protein shake and ignoring all the other good things that food actually does for our body. Protein shake is pretty much just protein a lot of the time. May have a couple of other little things added into it, but not nearly as much as what you're going to get from your actual food. And like protein shakes can still be beneficial. Like I don't tell people, no, you can't use protein powder, but it's that sort of supplement, you know, like when we can't reach your requirements or when it is going to be really tricky, that's where we use it. But it's always food first. It's going to give you the best benefit.
Let's go back to the word you said, a supplement. What does that mean?
Uh-huh.
It just means you're replacing something. So you're supplementing your food. So like they're not a meal. So that's what I think people mistake the word supplement and what they need, they're used for. They're supplementing for something when you can't actually get it in. So,
yes. And this is I have an entire like module about this in my program because I'm very, very specific about like supplements. Like, not everyone needs to be on supplements. And if you're not nailing your general nutrition, your supplements aren't going to save you. Like, the supplements are like the very tiny tip of the iceberg, like the 1%. That might improve your performance 1% after you're ticking off everything else. But if you're not doing that, your supplements aren't going to benefit you. Like,
that's like me. I take like a bunch of vitamins, but it's more or less just because my body is depleted so much from training, working, blah, 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 that like that 1%, someone might walk past me when I get sick. So if I've doubled it up, like, you know, I'm eating my food, I'm looking after my health, I'm training, I'm doing whatever, and then I add that 1% on top, there's that 1% chance of me having something and getting sick and being worse than what I could and taking me away from training. So it's just like a boost, you know. If you're not eating your vegetables, like taking a bunch of vitamins isn't going to save you.
No. And I think I liked what you said there before is because you do so much training. So you're not like, again, that everyday sort of person that's like, oh, yeah, like I'm just going to work and then walking my dog and I need to have all these supplements. It's like, no, like you actually have increased requirements. You're putting your body under like a lot higher levels of physical stress from the type of training and everything that we're doing. And sometimes, you know, that will mean that our requirements of some of these, you know, vitamins, minerals, all that sort of thing is going to be higher. So that's one of the times that we tend to use these supplements because we're not 100% sure that we can tick it all off through your food, because it might actually be difficult
and
to do that.
There's certain things I don't eat as well. Like you might look at like fish oil as well, because I don't eat. I don't eat much. I don't eat fish at all most of the time. Yeah. And then you might look at things like magnesium as well. So just to help you sleep better, that type of stuff. So if I can increase my sleep, you know, it's going to increase my recovery, better stuff, things like that. And then obviously a few other things that are like just immune boosters in general, just because, like, you know, kids, if I'm around kids, which I am all the time, mm-hmm. kids come home from school sick. So like I get mm-hmm. sick, I get the flu, whatever. It's just a precaution because I like the last thing I want to do is spend 2 weeks being sick. So at least if I get sick, I'll probably get rid of it in like 2 or 3 days.
110%. And as I said, like, you're very sort of knowledgeable and you have the understanding of like, all right, you know, some of these things, they may not be doing miles for me, but I feel like I have that extra protection. And, you know, you're sort of very well versed in that. Whereas if I have clients that are like, oh, I'm taking all these things, I don't really know why I'm taking them, but they're also, again, you know, even another thing is like struggling then financially because they're taking all these supplements that may or may not be having an effect on them. It's like, well, maybe go off of them. But, you know, obviously if you're in the position that you're like, hey, that doesn't bother me, I'm happy to spend the money because health is my value. And, you know, I have that additional sort of income that I can use on that just in case, then that's fine. But it's having that understanding and you kind of knowing that before you're sort of going wild and like, scared sort of taking it because you're like, oh no, I'm gonna get sick.
Yeah, well,
and,
you know, like, that's the difference, you know, between me and most others is like I am an athlete, like I compete
yes.
like x amount of time a year, and my life is literally dedicated to powerlifting. So compared to someone that might come to me and get coached and does one comp a year and it's just a hobby, you know, so like spending yes. $120 every 3 months on vitamins to me is not an issue, because at the end of the day, if I get sick, I get taken away from work, I get taken away from my training, working towards whatever competition I'm going to. So I look at mm-hmm. it on a scale of like what it's going to affect in my life. So mm-hmm. I don't get paid sick days. So we continue working. That's the, and if I can stop that, that's better for me. But yeah, it's like we've always said, it's just a supplement. Like they supplement things. And before you look at that type of stuff, you might want to look at your nutrition and what you're eating. So with that, what's your thoughts on like when people are looking at health markers, like do you get people to do bloods and stuff like that to sometimes see what they might be lacking in?
Oh, 100%. Like when I have any new client come on, you know, it's part of my role as a dietitian that we need to be looking at their health as a whole. So I need to understand, you know, what is their medical history? And then, yeah, actually understanding, you know, if they haven't had to have blood tests in a while, I'm like, hey, just go out and do one. Like, look, it's yeah. not that bad to get them done. Yeah. Like most of the time it's like free for a lot of us in like Australia sort of thing through the Medicare system anyway. So we can get your bloods. And then if there's nothing that's abnormal, perfect. It means that there's nothing additional that we need to be worrying about. But, you know, if there is something that's on the lower side, then we can actually make sure that we're correcting that in your nutrition as well. That doesn't even have to mean jumping to supplements straight away, because again, if you're only using a supplement for a short period of time, but you know, you've become lower in that level already, it's like, well, obviously there was an issue with your food that it wasn't staying high enough, that it started to deplete. So we need to be still addressing that with your food as well. But yeah, if you're leaving things like that under the table and just sort of ignoring them, it can be another reason why you're actually not progressing as fast as the person next to you. And when we're coming back to it, like powerlifting is all about performance. Why are we not doing everything that we can to make sure that you're getting the best
performance? Yeah. And then as an athlete as well, like if you are an athlete and you do want to get like, know why certain things might be happening, you know, bloods are something that can give you a lot of information. I had an athlete do bloods recently and he came back to me and I was like, yo, you need to get someone to do nutrition because I can see that you're not eating right. And he's like, oh, how do you see that?
Yeah.
And I just like could see like his cholesterol levels were all over the shop. And then yeah. I made him adjust everything because I could tell he wasn't eating vegetables at all. And he admitted to it. He's like, and then so mm-hmm. he went and started with Zoe, and then like within like 3 weeks, he's like, oh my God, I can't believe eating 2 apples a day and a bunch of vegetables, how good I feel. I was like, because people don't understand. They feel like shit because that's their normal day. And until they learn the other side of the line, they don't know what it feels like to feel good all the time.
Yeah, and I like that you said that because so many of the people are awesome, you know, when we initially start working, they're like, how's your energy levels feeling? They're like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm good, because that's what they're used to. And like so many people are in denial that they're actually feeling really shit, but they don't actually know what that next level of feeling good looks like. This is why most of my clients, you know, in those first couple of weeks, they notice that their recovery is so much better. They're feeling like they're so much more energetic in the gym, like everything, because they've actually just never experienced that level beforehand. So what they think is normal is actually pretty poor. Like it's a lot lower than what, you know, it should
be. Yeah, 100%. And you know what, the one thing that I will say is really like dominant to use for this is like the person that sleeps 5 hours a day and is like, oh, I'm fine. I've been sleeping 5 hours a day for years. And then it's because they don't know what 7 hours feels like. And you know, like if you slept 7 hours a day, 5 days out of those seven, you would get like, what is it? 2, 4, 6, 8 hours more sleep a week. Like that's almost another day's sleep, you know?
Like, I just think this comes back to, like, the recommendation is 7 to 9 hours. It's not 5, it's 7 to 9, being that average of being 8. And I fully understand that some people have lifestyles or work schedules that really do limit this, and there's not a lot that they can do with that. And, like, that's just going to be, if that's, like, I have some clients like that, and it's just fully always, like, reinforcing, like, hey, like, this is just your lifestyle. Like if you want to change it, you can, because honestly, like if you go out and like actually research the effect of poor sleep on your body in the long term, like it's freaking scary. Like what will happen to your body in 20, 30 years time? Like the degree of like, you know, chronic disease risk and everything that simply comes back to not sleeping enough. Our sleep is when our body recovers. It's when it sort of regenerates. It's when our memory sort of like re-imprints in our brain, like everything, like, unfortunately, these people that don't get enough sleep are going to end up a lot worse off later on in life. Like the evidence is there.
You literally sleep time off your life. Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is too, like your moods change. It doesn't just affect like you in general, it affects everyone around you. So like when you
Yeah, it affects your hormones, everything. Like, again, you know, so many people find it wild that I'm like, if you sleep more, you will actually feel fuller and get hungry less. Like, I use this a lot for my weight loss clients. I'm like, it actually affects your hunger hormones so much. They're like, oh, I never knew that. It's like, yeah, sleep is actually really important for us.
The average for me is 9 to 10 a day.
Look, I'm a solid 8. 8, if anything less than 8, I'm a grumpy human. I don't want to be around anyone, but like 8 on the dot.
Lately, I've been getting about 8.5, but normally it's around 9. Like, I love my sleep, and it's just, I don't know, like, I just, if I get anything under 8, I feel it the next day. It's just because mine's been so high for so long, and I just sleep really well. Like, I literally sometimes, like, go to sleep and wake up, and I'm like, holy shit, I just slept like 9 hours. I feel great, you know? And it's just the way I've probably been like since I started my own business, just because of the fact of like being an athlete, same thing. I adapted my lifestyle to suit being an athlete, changed my job, did everything I had to do to make it work to be a better athlete. So,
and that's it. If you want to be the best, you honestly do have to adjust your life to do that. I've even had other clients that are just in stupidly high stress jobs, and I've told them time and time again, like, mate, like, to be honest, there's nothing else that we can do here. You need to address that in life if you want to progress. If they say no, it's like, all right, well, I actually can't do anything more for you at this point, because that is the biggest thing that's holding you back from achieving any of your goals, and only you can end up sort of changing that. But no, yeah, like it's a massive sort of thing. And I think you were talking about beforehand, like, you know, sleep quality is then another thing. You can get 8 hours of sleep, but if you spend half of it tossing and turning, you're up for 30 minutes here and there, you're not getting 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah, that's that. And that's where, like, you might add in some form of supplement if you're having trouble sleeping, like magnesium or melatonin or something like that, something to help you get into a better sleep. But I do think that the reason people don't sleep well is because they have stress in their life. Stress like plays a massive contributor to like a lot of things. Reasons why people don't eat, reason why people don't sleep right, have bad training sessions. And it's like the old glass analogy that I always talk about. Like every time you get a bit more stressed, the glass fills up a little bit more. Then you go and train and the glass fills up again. And when you get to the top, you know, you can deload, but like there's no one ever reaches the top. They always overflow. And once you overflow, it's so hard to come back from that. So,
yeah, 100%. And I agree with you, because like yes, supplements can be used here for sleep, but I like that you then brought up the stress point, because this is where I sit there and talk to my clients around, like, all right, well, what is stress? Like, are we actually managing that stress? And sometimes that means going to talk to people. Sometimes it just means that we need to set your routines up better, you know? Is it the fact that we need to create a better wind down or sort of like nighttime routine for you? Are you doing your own self-care activities in the evening to help you, you know, come down from your day and be ready to go into a nice, good quality sleep as well? Like, all those sorts of things are, you know, what we kind of cover, because we need to be, as you said, like, stress will affect everything, including your food intake. So much of what I do for a lot of my clients as well is helping them to understand those sort of triggers and be able to identify them, so we can then use your food in the best way.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, sometimes you can't minimize that stress, because, like, for example, people who go to uni, people who have high stressful jobs at times because it's a busier time. But then what you need to do is you need to talk to your nutritionist or Zoe or me and talk about that, so we can either minimize workload, we can work in with you with your actual nutrition or training, so that we can make the things that we give you easier, so the things that are higher stressed and more priority at that time work well with what we're doing as well. Because it's all, I think it's all a massive communication thing. I think that's one thing that people lack a lot of, is communication. They just try and, like, oh, I'll be fine, I'll get through it, and then they just crumble, like the glass gets full and everything fills over, and then they go, oh, I can't do training anymore, it's too hard, or I can't do nutrition anymore because it's too hard, and they just stick with the high stress thing, whereas we could have micromanaged it with you and worked alongside of you to manage all three things at once and still be able to do your hobby, get maybe lose some weight, and then still be able to deal with the stress at your work.
Exactly. And, like, I like to think of it as, like, as you said, like, we can't always eliminate the stress, but we have to work out how we can manage it better and manage those other external factors around this. And this is one of the key things. Like, I have so many people that when I do end up talking to them, though, they're like, oh, you know, I thought about talking to you for a while, but I was a little bit nervous because I had all of this kind of going on, or, you know, I didn't know if I could kind of fully commit to the process because, you know, I know I'm going to have to change around a lot of things. And, you know, like, they kind of build it up as this, like, big, huge thing. But a lot of times, like, nutrition doesn't have to be as complicated as what people think. Like, so many people overcomplicate it, like, oh, I can never enjoy the foods and, like, I'm not going to be able to go out on the weekends, or I'm not going to be able to hang out with my friends. And, like, it's okay to still have some of those values. Obviously, again, this will depend what, I guess, period in your sort of prep is going to be and how dedicated you are as an athlete. If you are, you know, wanting to go to win and you're coming up to a prep, then we may need to manage some of those other things as well. But if you're, like, in an off season or that sort of thing, or just going in as a hobby sort of athlete as well, you know, like, we can still have balance. And I really sort of preach this to so many of my clients, is that nutrition doesn't have to overtake your life. You don't have to be spending hours on hours, you know, meal prepping and planning and that sort of thing every single week. It shouldn't be that hard. We can actually make strategies that fit into your life and make your life easier.
You can get pre-made shit from Coles and fucking Woolworths these days. So, like, so easy.
There's always an option, like, to make it easy.
Like, you go back 5 to 6 years ago and what you'd have to do compared to what you can do now, whether you, like, buy pre-made meals. There's so many companies. Like, life's easy. If you are making nutrition hard, it's just you being lazy. And that's, I'll put it simple as that. Because, like, you can go order you foods, you can go order, like, Muscle Chef meals, anything like that. And, you know, like, finances do come into that sometimes. But then you could get, like, a couple of them a week when you have, like, busy days and still be able to get all your nutrition in, you know? It's exactly. So simple.
Yeah. There's always ways to manage it. No matter what budget you're on, there's a way that you can manage it. Like, I have had clients that have really struggled financial-wise, but we've still been able to find ways that they can make their healthy nutrition choices easy. And that's all it is that we actually need to figure out, what does your life look like? How can we create that plan that's going to suit you specifically? Because, yeah, the same plan isn't going to fit for everyone. But I don't care if you're a FIFO worker, if you do night shift, you know, if you are using, you know, ready-made meals, there's still a plan that we can actually put in place to help you advance your nutrition and then support your performance.
Yeah, well, like, the variance of clients that you have from over us is, like, you've got people who work in, like, the mines, you've got people who work day jobs, you've got people who do night shift. Like, there's so many variants and everyone makes like things work, you know. It just comes down to how bad you want something. And like at the end of the day, there's going to be a point whether you're a novice powerlifter and you're going to want to be an elite lifter eventually, there's going to be a point where you realize that you need to fix your nutrition. Because I can tell you now, most people that come in at a novice and want to be elite, they wished before they get with someone, like 3 years later, they wish they'd done their nutrition 3 years prior. And just because of the fact that you, it's like someone says to me, like I go to the gym all the time. I train in a commercial gym and there's a lot of young powerlifters there that don't have coaches. And I said, oh, like a few of them are pretty strong. And they're like, oh, I say to them, like, oh, why don't you just get yourself a coach? Like, you know, you're going to progress. Oh, I don't want to get a coach until I get to this point. And I'm like,
but that's it, right? Like, they're like, oh, I want to get better before I get a coach. I was like,
yeah, that's exactly right. It's like, how do you get better? Like, I just look at them like, bro, you know, you realize like you're investing in your future by getting a coach. I'm a coach. I have a coach. Yep. I'm investing in my future.
Exactly.
I'm like, you know, at the end of the day, like if you want to be the best you can be, like you need an external view to show you. Some people don't. I know people that don't have coaches and coach themselves, but I'm not that person. I'm balling.
But they also probably have the time that they put into doing enough of the research to create that themselves. Like they are probably sometimes the more dedicated people that will like go out and make sure that they do that. They're not the people that are, you know, like, oh yeah, like I'm kind of doing this and then kind of not. And then, oh, I saw someone else post this, so I'm going to try and do that as well. But then that kind of contradicts what I have been doing. And they kind of fluff around and they make little bits of progress and they might go backwards. And then like the biggest thing that I say about this is like, I go back to that, you know, muscle, like rate of muscle gain that we talked about. Your first year in particular, you're going to really be able to maximize that out. If you're not focusing on things like your nutrition and training properly, then again, you're shooting yourself in your foot and you're missing out on some of those gains that you could be getting.
And yeah, like I said, when they, like people who do coach themselves, they're probably not like me, a ball of anxiety and prep. I need someone to whinge to. I need someone to talk to. otherwise, I will mentally fall apart. That's just who I am. But, and you know, some people need that from me, but then also like you know, some people can deal with their own shit. I can't. But I the thing is too, like I find it really hard to look at a view of what I'm doing because I get so clouded in and so hyper-fixated from ADHD in what I'm doing, so that I need that external view. Whereas like saying that might happen to people, it's like with nutrition, like people think they're eating enough and they're like, this is enough. Well, that's enough, and that's their internal view. But from an external view, from someone who's actually studied, and it's like, man, you need to eat more. Like literally, like your body needs more food. You're putting more output. You're burning more calories, so you need to make up for those calories so that you recover better. Yeah,
100%. And that's it. Like honestly, and I think the diverse range of clients that I see, especially for powerlifting, like it's from those people that do struggle a lot with their mental health and that they really need a lot of support and a lot of probably more hand-holding with some of these things, up to people that are honestly have done this sort of stuff before, but they don't want to have to think about it. They want to be like, hey, I want you to tell me what to have. I'll do it. It's fine. But I want to then know, you know, when things sort of change, you know, when something isn't working as much. I just want to have someone to be like, sweet, here's what we can do. Go out and do it. And then they don't have to think about it. Again, it's trying to make your life easier. You know, you shouldn't have to be worrying about, you know, planning your whole training program or, you know, periodizing your entire nutrition plan. That's not the point. That's why we do the work and we do the study, so that we can kind of just give you the information like, hey, here, this is what's going to work for you. And you just do it.
And to finish it off, like at the end, like we can use like D as a prime example of like someone too, like who was under eating. Like I think she was eating 1800 calories a week training. She was at 97 kilo body weight. And then she started with you and you put her up to a surplus, and I think he's reached 2600 or 2700. So,
yeah, it was about 2600.
She cut like 5 kilos, like 5 or 6 kilos, eating more food than she was.
Yeah, I remember she was eating about 500 calories more and still losing weight, whereas initially she wasn't losing any weight at that lower calorie.
So, yeah, it shows that your body kind of holds on to, like, fat and resources when it knows it's not going to get enough nutrients to, like, actually keep it going. So, you know, you could be depleting yourself from hitting your goals in body composition because you're not eating right. So,
yeah. And the best way that I describe this, because a lot of people kind of talk about that, you know, starvation mode sort of thing, and it's like tiny little bit to do with that, but not as much. Like, honestly, majority of people, if they're under consuming, their energy expenditure is likely going to be reduced. So we see this to the highest extent in people like bodybuilders that do really, really severe cuts. Like they basically walk slower, they talk slower, they stop fidgeting. Their body actually tries to compensate and reduce down their energy expenditure. And this, you can then sort of, you know, generalize that across anything. Like, you know, if, yeah, we're doing powerlifting, but we're not eating enough, that means that you're not going to be pushing as hard in your session because you physically don't have the capacity to do it. You're trying to, but your actual physical capacity is limited. That means that you're going to be burning less calories. So it happens from that sort of aspect. And this is where I really encourage all my clients to kind of go on the opposite end of the spectrum and be like, no, like, how can we fuel your training? How can we get you to feel great so you can go out and perform great? And if you want to get body composition results from that, sweet, you can still do it that way, but not doing this, I'm going to eat as little as I can and then exercise as much as I can, because it doesn't work well for your body.
And then, like, to go back to the D situation, like, under, she's the probably one of the best examples, and Nushka as well, is like, she got down to 92 kilos before last comp, and now she's sitting at like 90 to 89 kilos. And you've only done like a small cut with her, like probably 6 weeks or something, eh?
Yes.
You did a small cut, and now she's increased her food back into Pro Raw again, and she's still losing weight.
Yeah, and this was over Christmas
And the funny thing is that she's actually started losing more weight with the increased calories than she was in the cut. So it just means her maintenance is probably higher.
Yeah, and that's it. And this is the way that we should be looking at doing. Like, we planned this ages out in advance. We looked at the Christmas period. We thought, you know, it's not ideal, but she was very committed to kind of doing it over this period. So we worked out that this is going to be the best period to go lower so that we can actually start pushing calories up now closer into the weeks into Pro Raw, because I don't want us to still be sitting in a deficit. So, you know, we're looking at, you know, progressively increasing back up. So by the time we get to Pro Raw, we're actually fueling at maintenance and we're underweight, we don't have to worry about doing any cuts, anything like that, because we're quite safe. That's it.
All right, I might finish up there. Thanks, everyone, for listening in. I will stick the webinar link in the bio on this, and then also I will share it on, you know, it's on River City Barbell. It'll be in our stories. Zoe will probably pop another story up this week. I'll probably put another post up again about it. But if you guys are looking to just join the link, and we'll send you an email. Even if you can't make the webinar, still send us, like, sign up, because we will send it out to everyone after it's done.
Yeah, so there'll definitely be a replay. And, like, I definitely encourage, if you're not 100% sure on, like, your nutrition just in general, or you are interested in learning a little bit more, like, definitely attend this webinar, because, as I said, like, we're looking at pretty much like 5 really simple strategies that we can start to implement that will make an actual huge difference in your powerlifting performance. But it's often things that people don't really think of. So we are going to be sharing some of those tips. And then in the webinar as well, I am going to be sharing a little bit more about my new program that I am going to be releasing as well. So if you attend that, you'll also get the new deets and be the first to hear about that.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Barbell Coach and Physio Podcast. Subscribe to hear future episodes and join us on Instagram at Barbell Coach and Physio and at Fox.Physio and River City Barbell _Oz.